And just for the record, this sucks.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With Again With This, episode 190. Let's watch Monica Keena and Doug Savant in First Daughter, 1999. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Are there competing First Daughter movies?
There are, and we're watching the other one next week. Spoiler!
Sucks might be a little strong. I guess we'll talk about it. Hello, Tara.
Hello.
Hello again, Patreon supporters. We hail to you, Chiefs, because you make this podcast and the main podcast Again With This possible, and we appreciate it so much. Today, patriotically, we are contemplating, as noted, a 1999 TV action movie called First Daughter. Not that one with Katie Holmes, although, like we said, we'll get to it. This is the TBS one that threw White House Down and Whitewater Summer into a blender and came out with the guy from Prison Break and his floofy 90s hair kidnapping Abby Morgan while gay Matt found love with a lady who may be best known for playing a gay Olympic runner, but okay. I had never heard of this First Daughter before I found it on Monica Keena's IMDb. Tara, had you heard of it?
Nope. Was not conversant with TBS Superstation originals, but bless them for giving this a shot.
Yeah, there's probably pretty good reason that we'd never heard of this. It does seem a little weird that we had, that I at least did not know that it became a whole series. We'll get into it. This premiered in August of 1999 on TBS, which the Siberia of the schedule. It is the first of three, and Doug Savant is in all of them. Eventually, Daryl Hannah takes over for Mariel Hemingway as the wooden action heroine in charge. TV movie vet Armand Mastroianni, no relation somehow, directs a teleplay by Chad and Carrie W. Hayes, who got their TV writing starts on Booker, probably enough said.
Wow.
And went on to Baywatch, The Conjurings, et al. And one of the executive producers is Jason Hervey. So, yeah, okay, like Wayne Arnold's actors get into producing. That's fine. But like he's our age or like he stays at my age. So it, like already he was doing this 25 years ago. Also, 1999 was 25 years ago.
I know.
Kill me. Okay, let's get into this extremely complex and thoughtful plot. JK, the titular first daughter, Jess, that's Monica Keena, has just pitched a sulk to her dad, President Gregory Harrison, when he nixes her going to a club with friends. Then it's time for the prez to mingle at a Hollywood fundraiser while Secret Service agents Mariel Hemingway, Alan Dale, a.k.a. Joseph Anders of the Dynasty reboot, Tara, that was just for you.
That's right.
And Agent Paul Tassone, nothing non-Australians have heard of, so yeah, guess where this was shot. Keep an eye on things. Unfortunately, this universe's off-the-grid militia wingnuts initiate a full-scale attack on this party. This shootout is both remarkably intense for television and risibly cheaply done. There is a lot of silent movie flailing and obvious mannequins taking gunfire. Agent Mariel stuffs the president into his bulletproof limousine, but then hurries him out again just as quickly once it becomes clear the assassins are pointing a rocket launcher at the car again, and it can't take more than one impact. Because this violates protocol, Agent Alan Dale boots Agent Mariel off the presidential detail. The president doesn't love that, but he's also arranged an outward bound type trip for Jess in the wilderness, and while it's a demotion for Agent Mariel to accompany her, and Jess thinks there's something romantical going on between her widowed father and Agent Mariel, the prez wouldn't entrust his most precious blah, 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 blah. Off we go to the mountain time zone. Were you about to say that it was copyright compliant, outward bound?
No, I was about to say you can tell Jess is a fictional child because she is so excited about this trip, which like nothing nothing we have seen from her to this point would indicate like she's outdoorsy. Like it's just, I don't buy it, but fine.
I think she just wanted to do those cute braids with the zigzag part in back, which okay. she gets to do, and it looks cute.
Thank you for mentioning the zigzag part.
Oh my God, yes.
Because it's 1999, and that you was the style at the
exactly
time.
Exactly when we are.
Yep.
That zigzag plus, part.
That plus her Discman being a major plot point in this, which I'm sure you will get to.
Kind of. I will also be glossing over a lot of it because A, no one cares, and B, even the writers didn't seem to exactly know how technologies, but anyway, It's the night before everyone heads into the interior, and there's some blah blah with Agent Paul Tessone's novel, which basically ensures that character will be dead by the third act, and then Agent Mariel heads to the only bar in town for a beer, which doesn't seem like a great idea, but she doesn't get to relax anyway. Because Doug Savant's character is trying to pick up. Guess how it goes. Clip two.
You know how to two-step?
No, I don't.
Then I'll teach you. Come on.
No, thank you. I have to get up early.
I'm not letting you get out of here unless you have a dance with me.
I said no, thank
you. No, don't be like that. Okay, all right. All right, so you like to lead. That hurts.
Really? I feel for you. Kind of hard to two-step with a shattered wrist, but if you like, I'll snap this thing and I'll get up and dance. If not, I suggest you take no for an answer and leave me alone.
I can pretty much guarantee you that.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Just put this scene on a loop in every bar between here and wherever they filmed this. Banff, Australia. If that seems like kind of a waste of Doug Savant, don't worry. He's back. The next morning, as the lead instructor on the rafting/camping trip Jess et al. Are headed out on. Ruh-roh.
What are the odds?
Well, we've watched television programs before, so pretty good. Fortunately, that first contact is basically completely out of character for Grant for the rest of the movie. Grant is Savant's character's name. Things are a bit awkward between him and Agent Mariel, but he eventually decides to let it go, but only because Jess nastily tells him that Agent Mariel doesn't like dudes that way. And as Agent Mariel slowly proves herself in the wilderness, she and Grant come to an understanding. Meanwhile, Jess and one of the floppy-haired boys on the trip, Milo, bond over listening to Everclear, teehee, and they make out. But that leads to a showdown with Agent Mariel when Jess temporarily can't be found because she's off macking with Milo. Clip three.
Why are you trying so hard to ruin this for me? Hey, once you turn this around, you know the rules.
Give me a break! We're in the middle of nowhere! Don't you get it? Nowhere! Hear that? Nowhere! God, I hate you.
Look, you're not at the top of my list either. But like it or not, I got a job to do. So why don't you stop with the spoiled, pain in the butt, little brat attitude and give me a break?
Absolutely not how either of these people would speak to the other in this situation, in my opinion. Mm-mm. Your thoughts?
No, I mean, I would just say Mariel Hemingway should be very embarrassed that she is being acted off the screen by Monica Keena and her extremely legitimate brat routine. Like, she is maybe not credible in the dialogue. It's very over the top, but I also buy it because she's so good at playing parts like this. Like, she's so convincing being a little shit.
Yeah. And she always has that. She always holds a little something back so that you kind of feel for her.
Yeah.
Like, you remember when she's being a brat, what it was like to be that brat.
Yes.
At least I do.
100%.
And then, of course, there were shades in this scene of the screeching from the Law and Order episode.
Yep.
God help me. But I was like, wow, that screaming is tough to take and very credible.
Mm-hmm.
But this script, like, it's not that it can't decide what it's doing, because it already decided, but it's like it's trying to tease us with some... It's, you know, Secret Service agent stepmom. Like, no.
Mm-mm.
No one thinks that's what's happening. And even if it were, they wouldn't talk to each other like this. So anyway.
Mm-hmm.
At some point in here, the Doomsday Prep Squad happens upon the Outward Bund trip and realize that they could kidnap Jess and trade her for their leader, whom the FBI snatched up in a cabin raid earlier in the film. It is not 15 seconds after Agent Mariel and Jess talk out what's really going on between Mariel and the Prez, i.e. To Wit and Fizz, nothing, when more gunfire erupts, killing Agent Paul Tassone, injuring the non-Grant guide, and sending Alex tumbling down a rock face and crushing her flip phone.
Oh,
much resourceful buddy movie prepper tracking ensues, including a Rube Goldbergian escape from a floorboard bomb trigger in a cabin whose denouement is so fake and so silent movie that I watched it like 5 times and laughed every time. Hemingway and Savant seem to be having legit fun, like leaping off of a tramp in some soundstage somewhere onto a mattress.
Mm-hmm.
So good for them, but there's really just a lot of back arching. And then once they stand up, there's the artful smudges on the face. It's really amazing.
Yeah.
And then there is so much climbing and rafting and not having discernible chemistry en route to a speed-esque ending to do. So let's do it. The Prez is trying to negotiate with Dominic Heatwave Purcell, who is almost unrecognizable with A, his puffy 90s hair, and B, something closer to his real accent. Like, I knew he was in it, but then I was like, oh, it's him.
Yeah.
Because he had hair and I just didn't spot it.
His voice also seems way higher than in Prison Break. I was struck by it in every time he talks, which is not much. He's more of like, you know, standing and glowering and doing action stuff. They do not require him to do a lot of acting, which is wise because he's not good.
The voice is like, it's as though to convincingly do an American accent, he decided that he was going to do this like Groot or like, not Groot, Iron Giant.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah. Timbre. It's like, do you have a polyp? What's up? I mean, it's not good acting, but it's better than you've come to expect from old Bullethead. I mean, it's different at least. So there's that. But you can all judge for yourselves. In clip 4.
Talk! Do it!
Daddy? Alex, Mark, and Cliff are dead. They killed him. He said they'll kill me too if you don't do what they say.
Remember Michigan? I do. We lost men that day. Is it chance or destiny that unites opportunity with cause? Or just plain good old luck? Either way, I'm not complaining.
I am. You're bad at this. This is like a fourth generation mimeograph of Brad Pitt and whatever that movie was where he was playing an IRA sleeper cell guy. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Like, it's not enough to be pretty is A. B, you're not as pretty. As Brad Pitt. Okay, so Bullethead wants Michael Smith released in exchange for Jess. If they refuse, Jess dies. You know the drill.
Mm-hmm.
Climby, climb, climb, climb! Mariel Hemingway very obviously lies face down on a rocky patch of ground and the camera shoots her like she's dangling postcards from the edge style. No one is convinced. Rafty, raft, raft! Grant tries to do something with the raft that will help. I think he's trying to create some kind of pickup point so that Jess can escape during a bathroom break, which doesn't end up working despite the fact that the full force of the United States government is transmitting through a country station giving her directions. So everybody's got to converge on a bridge to trade hostages. Pew, pew, pew! Jump, jump, jump! Whitewater chase! Shallows wrestle! Agent Daly conks Bullethead with a rock! Alex gives Grant CPR! Everything is fine. Everyone gets hugs from Jess, even Agent Mariel, and the strings of relief are really thrilled about it. Sure. I mean, let's talk about this movie. It was 15 minutes too long.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe they got another 2 movies out of it, but I don't have to watch them, so I'm not angry about it. You?
Yeah, this was fine. It really took me back to a time when, like, regular ass cable networks were making movies like this all the time. Like, movie of the week really was a thing. It was a movie and it came out every week.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about a lot of these because a lot of Starverse people are in them. It was competently enough done. It really took me back to a time when presidents were still the heroes in movies, you know? Like, it's not something we're really doing that much anymore. And I, you know, I've already said I thought Kina was good. I really think Doug Savant has a lovely, natural quality in a part like this. I mean, partly it's being opposite Mariel Hemingway, who is like a popsicle stick of talent, but he just seems like that guy. And he just has a natural kind of like throw it away quality that it sticks out for being too good almost in a movie like this, I think. What did you think of him?
Yeah, I thought he was great. I also kind of think that Mariel Hemingway, if she didn't, should have had this kind of like D-list action movie like Hallmark action movie career all along, because this is like, for this, she's fine. She probably should have been the agent who was writing the novel and got killed off.
Yeah.
But you got to put someone against Doug Savant. But yeah, he really is like way better than his material a lot of the time and could just as easily have played the baddie in this.
Oh, yeah.
The decision to make him this like, you're going to two-step with me or else, dude. And then he's like the friendly guy who cares about everybody and bonds with the kids. But, you know, it's a TBS movie of the week, whatever. But yeah, he's great. Kina is also very good in a wildly underwritten part that basically she's like a snotty MacGuffin, but she acts the hell off it.
She does.
Okay.
Yeah, she's always draws your attention. I think she's got tons of charisma. I wasn't mad to watch this. This was a perfectly fine way to spend the time. And the two of them and the rest of the cast, I think, all did what they needed to do for a cable action movie. And sometimes that's what you're in the mood for. And if you are, this will get you there.
Mm-hmm. And we'll see how it fares against First Daughter 2, the First Daughterianing.
We
next
sure
week.
Will!
Hello, everybody, especially you. Yes, you. Yeah, I'm talking right to you. This is Again with This, episode 191. Let's watch Katie Holmes and Melissa Rivers in First Daughter, brackets, 2004. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Hello, listeners. Thank you so much for being here as we complete our First Daughter duology. Last week, you heard us discuss the 1999 First Daughter starring a person from Dawson's Creek.
This one should be referred to as Second First Daughter.
That's right. This is the Second First Daughter. Great point. Now we're going to talk about the one that came out in 2004, starring Katie Holmes. It was originally released September 24th of that year. According to IMDb, it was pushed back after Chasing Liberty, which was a Mandy Moore movie with a very similar plot, came out in January and flopped. And then this one flopped even worse, despite having an arguably bigger star at that time, especially than Mandy Moore with Katie Holmes. It was written by Jessica Bendinger, who wrote the screenplay for Bring It On, and Kate Condell, don't know her. And it was from a story by Bendinger and Jerry O'Connell, that Jerry O'Connell, believe it or not. And speaking of believe it or not, it was directed by Forrest Whitaker well before his Oscar for The Last King of Scotland. He also does a little fairy tale narration. We'll get to it. The plot is extremely simple. I'm going to zoom through it. Sarah, just when you have stuff you want to call out, let me know. But I have a lot of, I'm just going to do the plot and then the questions and discussion points that I felt it sparked. So here we go.
All right.
Holmes plays Samantha McKenzie, whose father, Michael Keaton, is the president of the United States. Hilariously, does not get a first name. He's President Dad.
No, he does.
He does. It's not on IMDb. What's his name?
John.
Thank you. No wonder I
forgot. Or Batman. We will also accept Batman.
Sam has been worn down by living her entire life in the public eye, most especially critiques of her wardrobe, apparently, and is looking forward to getting a little freedom by attending college in California. Although she is inconveniently starting as a freshman just as her father is in the middle of his re-election campaign, Sam gets some pretty minor bad press and clashes with her dad from a distance about how much of a Secret Service detail it's going to take to keep her both safe and out of trouble. And then she starts getting closer with James Lansom, played by Mark Blucas from Buffy. He is a classmate who also ends up taking over as her RA, and he helps her evade the press to sneak out for very PG-rated fun. And then when she brings him to a fundraiser in New York, she dances with him over his stressed-out objections and is having a great time until there's a fender bender out front and he rushes her out and clip one.
Deal with me!
What about Mia?
They'll take care of her. Go! Go!
Lucky Charm is at location 6. Roger that. We're taking her home.
Lucky Charm secure.
Whoops. He's been a Secret Service agent this whole time. This is supposed to be a surprise, I think. Anyway, she gets back at him by getting publicly drunk. Her parents pull her out of school to campaign. Blah, blah, blah. President Dad saves his job. And maybe James and Sam will see each other when she comes home for spring break. Oh, yeah. Dad also gets reelected. Phew. Anything to add before we drill down with a question, Sarah?
I mean, my first question is, how is this an hour and 44 minutes long? But I have a feeling we'll get to it.
It is very long, considering how little
it's
happens.
So long.
How do you suppose Jerry O'Connell came to develop this story? Because he's, you know, not really known as a writer, and it doesn't seem to align with any of his interests.
I don't know. Also, how did the writer of Bring It On shart out this?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's the problem, is that they were working on it together. But, like, I can't trace back, even theoretically, like, the synapses that led to this stroke.
No, me neither. So this definitely came out in a wish fulfillment era of movies for teen girls. The Princess Diaries had come out in 2001. There was The Prince and Me with Julia Stiles, also 2004. There was a general thirst for a young Prince William, which I vaguely recall because he was like my sister's age. Still is.
Mm-hmm.
There was interest in the Bush twins around this time, too. Even so, can we agree the introductory narration is a little much? Clip two.
Once upon a time, there was a little girl, just like any other little girl. And like most little girls, she loved collecting beautiful things.
Look at what I have.
It's a frog.
Always sharing them with her friends. She would throw the most amazing tea parties for her very closest companions.
Have you met my daddy? He's the governor, you know.
And then it happened.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you know that awkward but typical time of life when you feel like every eye is on you? Like you're the main attraction in a three-ring circus. That's right. She became a teenager.
There's more of this, but like, this is really condescending even to teenagers. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure that this movie was made for tweens. Like, I don't think anybody above the age of 12 is expected to see this movie. That's the only way that I can explain, although not excuse, the fact that she seems to have arrived from another planet.
She's got, like, baby brain. Yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
This is unbearable Kimmy Schmidt shit is what's happening. Like, sometimes she's all up to date on her dad's, you know, geopolitical blah, blah positions. But then, you know, the idea that she's like, how does one get into a movie, like, that he has to explain to her how popcorn and, like, chocolate would go together.
Uh-huh.
And it's like she's Nell.
Yeah.
The movie can't decide. And Katie Holmes does a pretty good job under the Cirques, but oof.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, this intro, what we're seeing as that's happening is, like, her at a tea party, but, like, she has no friends. Like, the only people that are there are guards. And so I think there's, like, potentially could have been something more, like, psychologically interesting or realistic about, like, this character's extreme loneliness. Like, truly, she's been,
right,
you know, that's part of why she's so weird, is because she's been isolated and protected and stuff, and like, you know, kept in bubble wrap until she gets to sort of go on her own to college. But mm-hmm. even so, it's like too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
As part of a montage, we get this clip of Joan and one-time 90210 guest star Melissa Rivers, clip 3.
Mom promised me you would never let me leave the house looking like that.
Never. Looks like she found Chelsea Clinton's old crimping iron and Amy Carter's sassoons. It's like a terrorist got a hold of her.
I don't know what's going on, but what do you think? What is the worst outfit you have ever seen Samantha wear?
I bet it's going to be close.
I bet it is, too.
There's been a lot of lousy outfits. If Mac is back, get in there and clean out your kid's closet.
The bad press stuff, I think, is inspired by the Bush twins. They started getting in trouble, you know, for underage drinking and whatnot in 2001, so before this. But obviously, like, for right. Chelsea to still be taking strays 4 years out of the White House, so unnecessarily mean.
Yeah, they mention her by, did they mention her by name in this
yes.
clip? Because they
yes.
do at some point. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's just brutal. Also, we don't see Samantha wearing anything that wasn't right off the rack at American Eagle that kids weren't actually wearing. She mm-hmm. looked fine.
No, it's
true. I mean,
true.
There may have been a butterfly clip, but that was everybody.
That was the time. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And the bad press stuff, too, is like, it's so quaint that everything hits the next day. Like, there's no...
Yeah.
It's not like now where everyone's phones lights up because no one has a phone. It's like on the front page mm-hmm. of the paper the day after whatever happens. And then you get a phone call on a landline from President Dad in a room full of people.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Speaking of whom... What could have possibly made Michael Keaton want to do this? What a thankless part. I mean, he's a pro. I think he does a good job, as always, but yeah. it's like such a who cares-er.
Yeah. And as usual, he's often the most interesting thing on screen. And mm-hmm. if he's in something shittish like this, you just keep thinking of how he could have made it more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, he has a bad hairpiece
yeah.
that is like not matched to his complexion.
Mm-hmm.
And looks like it was thrown at him from the side. And then, oh my God, it's not the first time and it certainly won't be the last. But television and film writers, if you have not been or had a teenage daughter or been a teenage daughter who had a dad, please hand off the writing of these scenes to someone who has, so that it doesn't seem like a child and her parent are about to fuck.
Yeah.
It's unacceptable. I'm so tired of it.
Agree.
Like the flirty chocolate cake. It's not appropriate.
No,
it's not appropriate.
It did make me his casting made me look up who played the president in Chasing Liberty, though, after we saw Gregory Harrison, who I feel like is a star verse in law at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Harmon, pre-NCIS Mark wow. Harmon was the president.
Wow.
I hope he was noticeably taller than Mandy Moore, because Michael Keaton isn't. He also is like looks real shrimpy next to Katie Holmes, even when they have her in kitten heels.
Yeah.
I'll say this, though, for the mother-daughter casting, Margaret Collin and Katie Holmes really look alike.
Yeah. They could. The only other person they could possibly have used, who they couldn't have, obviously, is Dr. Channing, who also would have looked like Katie Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have been cast as relatives. I want to say Dr. Channing was someone in a Kennedy miniseries. Mm. I will look it up.
Mm-hmm. There's also a scene where she anticipates her Jackie O casting, like coming out after her mother pulls her out of school for scandal reasons. And she's in like huge sunglasses, a little trench, like jeans, uh-huh. perfect jeans. She looks so Jackie O coded, like from the 70s era, even.
Mm-hmm.
We also meet, they mentioned it in the first clip, we heard her name, Mia, who is Sam's roommate, played by Amory, who is a pop star and an actor. And I appreciated that they gave some thought.
So.
I will say her performance is a C-, but I did appreciate that this character existed and that they gave mm-hmm. some thought to how annoying it would be to be Sam's roommate, including that Mia would essentially be like drafted into it based on background checks of like who is an acceptable person to be in the room with her, even though it's probably more likely she would have a single.
Yeah. Or be in a suite.
Yeah.
Because they make a big show of showing like the outside. It's supposed to look like a gothic dorm, like mm-hmm. an old school Northeast pile.
Right.
And it's like, just put her in a triple, because back in the day, you had the, you know, you had the big room. The student had the big room.
Mm-hmm.
Not you and me, because we were ladies and we weren't allowed in these schools. But then your valet had the little room, one of the little rooms, and then your whole wardrobe went in the other little room. So, you know, there's ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's ways to do this. They do it all the time.
Shouts to Tech from the real world Hawaii. He gets to play Mia's love interest from home. That was cute. Hardly any lines, but still, there he is.
Amazing. I went on IMDb and was like, that guy has to be Tech's twin. That is uncanny. Oh, it is Tech. Amazing. What a time to be alive.
I will also give the filmmakers, and I'm going to say mostly Bendinger, credit for how economical a pool party scene is early on in revealing Sam's character. She goes in a bikini, but it's got a little skirt. She sits primly by this absolutely tiny, unrealistic pool. She's trying to fit in. She's delighted by the scandalousness of the frat guy's performance. Like, she gets rushed out because there's, you know, someone thinks that there's a safety issue. And then she has to go to her dad's campaign office just in the bikini because she didn't have time to get her stuff. I don't believe she would be walking around for that long without one agent's jacket on. But other than that, I buy it. I thought that was a pretty good as a set piece as set pieces in this movie go.
Yeah. And as usual, sometimes it could take a couple of beats into a scene before you realize that, like, Katie Holmes is playing it. Katie Holmes is not cheating this crap material at all. Like the clip that we heard up top where she realizes that this, you know, her crush is actually a Secret Service agent being paid to spend time with her.
Mm-hmm.
And the way her face just crumbles is like, is so much better than this movie and this story deserve. But she's really trying to like make it feel like a real thing that could have happened to a real person. It's not working, but I respect the effort. And her delighted response at the pool party. Also, I was like, I think one of her Secret Service agents might have dropped her on her head at some point for her to be this tickled by these guys in their like flag trunks doing the Hail to the Chief thing, which as a runner is also not funny, but she sold it. She was very charming.
I kind of don't know why we get as much about President's dad's campaign as we do. Like when there's a rally on campus for his opponent, Samuels, the guy who's leading the rally is in an Amnesty International t-shirt. So I guess President dad is a Republican. Like they don't really delve into that. And if even that amount I thought was like too much.
Leave it.
Yeah. I'll say my most 49-year-old comment on this movie for 14 and under viewers is don't bother bringing up the domestic agenda if we're never going to find out how or if it actually changed on Sam's extremely vague advice. Clip 4.
It's too late to change our position. I don't think we should address it.
What do you think, Sam?
I don't really have an opinion, Dad.
Really? Are you sure?
Well, I don't know what could be more important than home.
Again, with the baby brain, like this is a good answer for a 5-year-old in a child beauty contest.
For someone to make up as something their 5-year-old said during carpool and then post on Twitter.
You're right.
That's this whole movie, honestly.
No, it's true. Also, in a 2004 news cycle, President Dad would have taken a huge polling hit from Sam abusing Air Force One for personal use to get Manny Petties on with her roommate.
Yeah, absolutely not happening.
I'll also say, when we're in the phase where Sam's trying to make James jealous, boo to whoever made her character say at the campus health clinic that the contraception that she was seeking was not for her. It should be, and she probably should have arrived on campus with something already in place, as it were.
Yeah. Or, and also, like, you know, Mia has that wrapped up.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Just get it from Mia.
Mm-hmm. But, damn it, clip 5.
Forget politics. Forget everything else but who I am right now in here. Things are different.
Things are different. I'd still follow you around all the time.
All right. Not to derail your discussion. But let me just replay this here.
Things are different.
I thought she said, like she was staring at her hand, finger different.
That's It's not far off from what that character might say, honestly.
Yeah, seriously.
Especially while drunk. I cut the line after where it should have been cut in the actual movie, he says, after I'd still follow you around all the time, because I wanted to, not because I had to. We got it!
Yeah,
we why are you explaining this? I know why. It's because it's for children. But even so, children would have gotten that.
Children would have gotten it by then.
Yes.
Poor Mark Lucas.
He was not my thing at this time. He is more my thing with each passing year. But the build of their relationship, I thought, was well done and as earned as it could be.
Yeah. And he was perfectly cast for this. He's the exact kind of knight-shaped potato that you want in this. I've always liked him and thought that he took way too much clip from Buffy and going forward, and I'd feel like if he hadn't been cast on that, he might actually have had a like better and more fruitful career.
Mm-hmm.
But they were cute. I thought they had okay chemistry. I mean, here's another problem, though. In this movie for children, perhaps children would not apprehend that Mark Lucas is my age and Katie Holmes is my brother's age. So, you know, when this movie came out, and when it was filmed, still, they would be too old. But when it came out, he was 31.
Yeah.
And she was 26.
He looks youthful, but not that young.
He looks 30, and that's okay. You can look 30, but...
It's true. Not like they would both be in a freshman German lit class, for sure.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So it closes with, the narration comes back as the Forrest Whitaker tells us, like, they're going to do this and that, and then Sam's going to be home for spring break, but that's another story, and if that was setting up a sequel, sorry, bros, this is a flop, so...
Yeah, tell it to someone else,
sequel Forrest. No occur. If you want a First Daughter sequel, you got to go back to First Daughter 99. All right, let's wrap it up. The movie in review, I'm going to say in 2024, a movie of this level is a Hallmark or possibly Netflix movie. Only Netflix because it does have people in it that you've seen before, and Hallmark is all like weird soap stars. And that's fine, actually.
It is fine. And you could actually cast most of the same people based on the skill level, except for Katie Holmes and Michael Keaton. No offense, Amari, who I never heard of before or since.
Yeah.
But at least on Hallmark, like, it would look cheaper, not much, but a little. And you wouldn't be able to get quite the level of talent. But like, Hallmark movies know what they are and what their own rhythms are.
Yeah.
This movie had absolutely no momentum, and there was no fucking payoff.
Yeah.
At the end. And she's like, well, I'm going to go back to college. And it's like, well, I'll see you on spring break. Like, okay. Yeah.
Right.
Can we back up to the part where she's like supposedly barely 18 and he is a Secret Service agent? So he's like minimum in his mid 20s, probably. I mean, oh, God, I don't know. It's not the most corrupt thing the Secret Service has ever done, but it's not great.
It's not great. I think they were supposed to be like, they were definitely soft soaping it, as it were. But like, there's all the business about like he's a third generation Secret Service agent. So I think the idea is like he has advanced more than someone of his age would have because he's a legacy. But even so, like 18 is quite young for a person in their at least mid 20s to be dating.
Yeah. I don't quite understand what this movie thought it was trying to do in terms of her character, but it is like, if you have to watch one of the First Daughters we've talked about, watch the other one. It's shorter and it knows what it's trying to be.
It's more, it is more fun, and it has more, definitely more action of all kinds. I mean, the other reason this is a Hallmark movie, if it happens now, is they have one kiss and it's like almost the last thing that happens.
And his hand is blocking it. I'm not sure there's any tongue. I mean,
yeah.
She has a couple of really nice moments where she makes you more annoyed at what this movie isn't.
Yeah.
Because it's like, why do you cast her? She actually is competent. But she's in this. It's just a shame.
Well, the other thing before we move on to her in review, if this movie happened now, it would not be about the presidency because that's too fraught. Now, it would be about a princess or actual, like, mm-hmm. of a fake European country, or just the princess of the pumpkin festival, like they love to do on fucking Hallmark. Anyway.
Or like the daughter of a famous person who sure. needed a lot of security. And
Yeah. So Katie Holmes in review, I think she is most effective in the moments where she's behaving correctly. And the clip that we heard where they're mm-hmm. like, what do you think, Sam? She says, I don't have an opinion. Like, that's most of what she has to do, where she's been like so drilled into, you know, media training that she doesn't actually betray anything to the degree where like she hasn't bothered to develop an opinion on anything because there's no point. Right. I do think she's good at that. She's good at like stoically accepting the James situation because she knows why it was done and she's mature enough and again, like drilled enough mm-hmm. to just let that stuff happen. But like also when she's sad, they take her for a run and she like breaks down sobbing and like she's good at that too. Like she's yeah. good at all this stuff. It's just so boring.
Yeah. And then her one Secret Service agent who like never talks until the end, which was sort of a funny runner, especially mm-hmm. since his name was Dylan. LOL. Yep. But then the other one is sort of like, you could see he's like flinching forward. He wants to give her a hug, but he can't. That's not the job. So, yep. I mean, there are some nice moments where they actually sat and thought like, what would this person for whom we have precedent? We could have just like looked some shit up about Amy Carter.
Right.
What would this person's life be like? Mm-hmm. What are the emotional beats that we want to hit? And occasionally they would just trip over one and there it would be because Katie Holmes is good at this.
Yep.
But mostly just a fucking waste.
No, it's true. We've now watched two Dawson's Creek girls in first daughter movies and roles. Which first daughter would you rank first on your list of potential hangs?
Monica Keena. At least she's like been outside, I uh-huh. think, by herself, like has some idea of how to negotiate the world. She might be a little bratty, but her.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would rather watch her movie if I had to watch either of these again. But I'm going to say, Sam, she's a little older than Jess and she is boring in the same ways I am boring. Like all she wants to do is eat pizza with a knife and fork, maybe watch a movie, I mean, like same.
Yeah, kind of same.